Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Microlinx seminar, Be Prepared, Experiences in Pre-Crisis Market Mapping. We're about to start. Yes. So welcome to everyone. We look forward to learning more about the topic, and I look forward to learning more about the topic from our presenters. A few reminders before I hand it over to Laura, please turn off your cell phones and or keep them silent. We'll have time for questions and answers after the presenters are done with their presentations. So make sure you like hold on to the thoughts or comments or questions that you want to ask in the end. And of course, I'll remind it to you after, like when we're about to start the Q&A session. That is that okay, Adam? Yep. Yeah. We'd also like I'll also remind you during the Q&A that try to speak in the mic so that our webinar audience can also listen to us. We're also joined by a lot of people on our webinar. I think it's more than 35 right now. It's from different countries, from Nigeria, Philippines, Netherlands, Mali, Luxembourg, Lebanon, Ethiopia, Dakar. So that's like a lot of committed market system mappers around the world. So yeah, so looking forward to that. And now with that, I'd like to introduce Laura Meissner, who is the Economic Recovery Technical Advisor at OFDA, and she will introduce the presenters and the topic.
Thank you so much, Usman, and thank you all for coming. We're really excited about this Microlinx breakfast. We feel it's kind of a special event because it helps to link sort of the more typical market development audience of Microlinx with what USAID's Office of U.S. Foreign Disaster Assistance does, which is, of course, disaster relief. We've supported EMMA, the Emergency Market Mapping and Analysis Toolkit, since its inception, and we're very excited to also be supporting EMMA's early bird cousin sister, PCMMA, for the pre-crisis market mapping analysis guidance. And it's especially, I think, of interest to both of our practitioner communities because PCMMA can help with planning disaster response as well as with preparedness, disaster risk reduction, capacity building, ensuring market-sensitive programming, maybe even laying the foundation for building resilience. In just a moment, I'm going to turn it over to Emily Sloan, who's going to introduce the tool itself. We will then hear a variety of lessons learned from different contexts around the world. So after that, Dina Brick from CRS is going to speak about Sudan. We'll come back to Emily Sloan for Pakistan. And then Emily Farr from Oxfam will talk about learnings from Ethiopia. Just to briefly introduce the speakers, Emily Sloan, who you'll hear from first, is with the International Rescue Committee. She recently joined them as an emergency markets officer. Previously, Emily was with Oxfam and ACF. She's led an EMMA training in South Sudan. She's just back from Pakistan, actually leading a pre-crisis market mapping, which is what she'll be sharing her experiences from. She's also worked on a range of agriculture and cash and voucher programs. Her own background is in environment with natural resources, conservation, as well as environmental policy, which led her into the food security and livelihoods world. When we hear from Dina, she is with CRS at the head of their food security and markets team. She works on proposal development, technical assistance during program implementation, everything relating to market-based programming, cash and vouchers, and food security. And her background is in international agriculture as well as food security and environmental work. And Emily Farr is with Oxfam America. She is their senior advisor for emergency food security and vulnerable livelihoods. She has a wealth of experience around the globe from Asia, Africa, and Latin America. She's worked with a lot of the other Oxfam organizations. She focuses on market-based programming, resilience, gender, information technology, and previously, before joining the humanitarian world, worked here domestically on decent housing and food security. So without any further ado, I will turn it over to Emily Sloan.
Laura mentioned I'm going to give a little bit of an overview of what we're talking about when we talk about pre-crisis market mapping and analysis, so that we're all sort of on the same page. So being a Microlinx audience, we probably don't have to tell you why markets are important. But from the humanitarian perspective, you know, markets are a very important source of goods and services for all people, including vulnerable populations. And they're also an important source of income for many people. So as humanitarians, we're particularly interested in what happens to markets during emergencies. And And we need to think about that as we design our responses. So we've seen this with the rise of cash transfer programs, which are really one type of market-based response. So, you know, if we ignore markets in our response and we're bringing in goods or services from outside and delivering them in times of crisis, we can actually undermine the recovery of markets. But if we do the opposite and we work through markets and help support markets to recover, then we can actually speed recovery and have benefits for not only, you know, the individuals who are struggling to survive in the wake of a crisis, but also for the markets themselves. So just a show of hands, is anyone in this room familiar with EMMA, the Emergency Market Mapping Analysis Toolkit? So not too many. So I'm just going to give a little bit of an overview of what EMMA is, because that was sort of the starting point for the pre-crisis market mapping and analysis. So as humanitarians in, I guess, 2009, 2010, this started becoming more mainstream, that we would go in after a crisis and actually conduct a market assessment. So that's EMMA is one of those types of post-crisis market assessment. So essentially we're looking at the capacity of the market to support the desired response. So, for example, can we deliver needed staple food items through local markets rather than bringing it in from outside? So that's one very basic example. But it doesn't have to be just related to food. We could do it for any kind of sector, shelter materials, hygiene materials, etc. So the EMMA toolkit sort of took off in 2010, and it's become quite widespread. So that's sort of a standard, not EMMA necessarily, there are other variations of it, including RAM and MAG, developed by IFRC. But the idea is we should go in after a crisis and do a market assessment, otherwise we risk, you know, doing harm. But what we found is that a lot of people were starting to use the EMMA in contexts that it wasn't really designed for. So it was designed for rapid onset crises, such as the Nepal earthquake that just happened. But we found that people wanted to use it for other things. So they wanted to use it, for example, in slow onset crises like drought. They also wanted to use it before crises happened, just to sort of do a baseline market assessment. So in response to that, the IRC and Oxfam co-developed this tool called PCMMA, and that came out in draft form last year. So it has a very similar structure and approach to EMMA, but there are some important differences. So just to give you a little bit of a background on EMMA, there's a whole toolkit. You can read all about it online. But it's a pretty structured methodology with three main components. So gap analysis is looking at what people's needs are and preferences at sort of the beneficiary, if you will, level. And then you look at the markets. So as I mentioned, with markets, we're looking at what is the capacity of those markets to support the needs of those affected people in the quantity needed. And then finally, we look at response analysis. So what are possible ways that we could respond to these crises? What would be advantages and disadvantages of each? And based on these three strands, we can create some recommendations on what might be the response options with the best outcome for markets and local people. So as I mentioned, there's a sort of whole step-by-step methodology to EMMA. These are the official 10 steps, but it sort of works you through. But I won't go into it too much now. And then there are specific tools that EMMA uses. So you've probably seen variations of this. I think in the event description for this, they talked about how we're looking at the value chain or the market chain for different market systems. But actually, a market system map is a little bit more than that. So when we're talking about market systems, we're not talking about, you know, the marketplace where you go to buy and sell goods. We're actually talking about the network of all things that impact one particular good or service. So for example, this is the market map we put together in Pakistan for flooding. And here we're looking at wheat flour. So a very, very specific item. So in the middle, you see the market chain. So that's what we're familiar with the, you know, from production to end consumption, all the different steps and actors that product passes through. But at the top, we also have the market environment. So, you know, what rules, what policies, what trends, what climatic factors affect this particular market system. And then on the bottom, we have infrastructure and inputs. So what are the most important pieces of infrastructure, inputs, or services that are needed for this market system to function? So whether those are roads or storage facilities or you know, financial credit services for vendors, whatever those things are, those go in our map as well. So it's trying to present a sort of comprehensive picture of what can be sometimes fairly complex. Okay, so that is sort of the nutshell of what we talk about when we talk about Emma. So as I mentioned, PCMMA is very similar to Emma, but there's a couple main differences. So one is the timing. So with Emma, we start by looking at the past. So you know, I'll refer to Nepal because it's fresh in our minds. So first we look at what were the markets like in Nepal before the quake, and normally we look like 1 month before the quake. And then we look at the present. So now what are those market systems like? And so what has the impact of that disaster been on those market systems? And then we are able to look at the future. So based on the information that we have, what do we foresee for these market systems for the next 6 to 12 months? So with pre-crisis market mapping, it's a little bit different because we reverse the two. So we should be conducting these assessments in quote-unquote normal times. So we're starting with the present. So what do market systems look like now? And then using some kind of reference crisis, we look at what happened to markets the last time there was this type of disaster. So in Pakistan, we looked at flooding. So what happened to the wheat flour market during the 2010 floods? So we look back and look at what the impact was. And based on that, and based on what we know the market system looks like now, we can say, okay, what is likely to happen in the event of a similar disaster in the future? So these are, you know, these are relevant in places where you have fairly predictable crises. So you know, places with recurring conflict like Eastern Congo, places like Pakistan with frequent floods, places like the Sahel with almost annual drought. This is where pre-crisis market mapping analysis makes sense to us. And the other big difference besides the timing is the potential application. So with these post-crisis assessments, obviously your main focus is on emergency response. So in the quake, we're talking about how can we deliver shelter materials to people through using market systems. But you know, it's quite urgent, it's quite pressing. It's about delivery of needed humanitarian goods and services. With pre-crisis market mapping analysis, we can do the same thing. So we are also looking at future emergency responses, but because we're doing it before, we have a little more leeway to look at some other and kind of exciting options as well. So we can look at preparedness. So what can we do to get ready for an emergency response that will utilize markets? We can also do disaster risk reduction. Are there things we can do now to strengthen markets or make them less vulnerable so that when crises do happen, the impact is less? We can also, in certain cases, help to develop early warning indicators. So if we know what normally happens to markets as slow onset crises like drought are unfolding, then maybe we can better predict them in the future and then, you know, be more prepared to respond. And then finally, because you're doing this assessment in a non-crisis time, there's a little more freedom to do capacity building. So market analysis capacity in the humanitarian field is something that's been a struggle to build. We've been working on it. So it's nice, and in an emergency with an EMMA, you're really focused on, you know, getting that response designed as quickly as possible. So it's not really the right time to be reflecting and discussing, you know, how markets function and these, you know, finer concepts of market analysis. But in the pre-crisis context, you have a little more space and time to do so. And then in case you're interested, I don't know if this presentation will be shared, but there are a lot of resources online where you can read more about PCMMA, Emma, and sort of join the conversations that are happening. So there's the Emma website that has a lot of documents on it, including Emma Toolkit and the pre-crisis market mapping analysis guidance document. There's also a community of practice where there's some interesting discussions, and we are very much in need of more development-oriented members in that group. And we also have the Twitter account that is rapidly growing. So without any further ado, so I'll hand it over to Dina, who's going to start talking about actual learning from PCMMAs we've tried out.
Thanks, Emily. So just a little bit of background. The reason why we ordered the presentations as we did, there is actually a method to the madness. So I'm just back from Sudan, where we were leading a training in PCMMA. And we've gotten to about half of the steps in the PCMMA manual. So we're at about from about step 1 to 8 if you were to look at the PCMMA manual. And I'll pass it back to Emily Sloan, who just spoke. They're a little bit further along in their PCMMA in Pakistan. And then Emily Farr will talk about Ethiopia because they've gone all the way. So we're kind of bringing slightly different perspectives in the based on where we are in the process. So just a little bit of context. I won't go into too much detail. I was in Khartoum, so we did this training in Khartoum, but it's for a project that's based out of Darfur, which is really a resilience-focused program, and it's in year 3 of the program. But a little bit of background. Many of you are familiar with this context, but what's relevant to the PCMMA process, as you know, this is a situation of ongoing crises, so it's quite unique in the sense of identifying a pre-crisis in the midst of a crisis, and I'll talk about a little bit about that, about the discussions that we had around that. The political constraints are many, to the point where for any assessment, not related or not related to market assessments, getting even to the field to be doing an assessment is a real challenge. So in our training, we ended up training with each other. We actually weren't even able to go to a market because the government wouldn't let us go. So that's just a challenge, sort of a lesson for any assessment, I would say, but just to note that there are these contexts that are quite complex in that sense. In terms of management and staffing for this particular program, because of the political constraints, because of security constraints, a lot of this is going to be remote. So we've gone through the training process, and now they're in the process of planning their assessment, which will be starting in the next couple of weeks, pending many things, right? It's pending government approval. It's pending security. So there are quite a few constraints going forward with this. Just a bit of background. The consortium itself is 5 NGOs, 6 NGOs, including CAFOD, although they're not taking part in the assessment. And it'll be throughout all 5 states in Darfur. This will be an assessment that we're leading together as a consortium. And the problem that the program itself is looking at is that households in returnee areas have insecure livelihoods. So it's a livelihoods-focused, resilience-focused program. And coming from a humanitarian background and having Emma and that emergency market assessment knowledge, that was a really interesting, and I would say, I don't know, it's a lot of good opportunities for learning when we're working with this kind of a tool within a resilience project. The crisis that we will be looking at for this PCMMA is drought. There's a possibility that we'll be looking also at armed conflict, but I'll talk about how those challenges within that as well. So this is just about the TEDUD project in general, just to give you some context. It's a resilience-focused program, as I noted. The focus is on building on existing systems, so the aims of our PCMMA are not really going to be emergency focused. They're going to be more of what Emily noted before about the preparedness, the DRR. What can we do to strengthen the market, the links in the market chains that will probably break during the next drought? And what can we do now to prevent that? So we're really looking at using this as a way of mitigating the impacts of a potential crisis. The focus is on producers and livelihoods, and we found this to be a challenge because market assessments are really not livelihoods assessments, right? So the objective itself really has to be clear in a program like this. As I noted, there are a few asset transfers built into this program, and Emily gave a background of the EMMA and how often that's about how best do we utilize these markets to transfer food or to transfer shelter materials or something like that to an affected population, and that's not really the goal of this program. So what was really exciting about this and about this opportunity is how can we use this tool to be doing something different than what we're used to in the humanitarian context. So I've pulled out 6 learnings that I just want to walk through and would also love your feedback at the end from your own experiences in similar contexts. And this is sort of learning from the early stages, so the first half of the pre-crisis EMMA toolkit. The first one, pre-planning, is critical. And I don't think this is necessarily any different from assessments in general, right? This is just something that is really an important part. I bring it up because it is spelled out pretty clearly in the PCMMA guidance about how to be getting prepared and some of the steps that you need to be doing to be getting prepared. Selection of participants is really important. This is one thing that we noted early. To be doing, whether you do a PCMMA training that's connected to the actual assessment itself, which is what the MLEs did, or because of our constraints, we couldn't actually do that in the field, so we had to do a training, and then they're going to do the assessment. But the ability to have a team leader that really has some markets knowledge already is really critical. This doesn't have to be, this isn't a tool for economists, but there does have to be someone on the team that is really familiar with markets, and in particular is familiar with needs assessments. One thing we noted is that not everybody has to be a markets expert to take part in something like this, but you have to have some experience with assessments. And we did note that we wanted to include some kind of market basics as a component of the training. So we didn't spend very long at all talking about markets, but it was actually useful to have some kind of a refresher about some of the marketing, some of the basics, and you know, what are markets and why are we doing this at all. You'll see as you read through the guidance that the market focal point is one of the key people in this whole process. So this is the person that makes some of the decisions around the market, is able to guide the different teams as they go out to the field to collect this data, and also will guide the response analysis process. This is actually something that Emily noted, that is this a mythical person? Does this person exist? How do we find this person? In this case, in Darfur, I am co-market focal point with someone sitting in Darfur. You already see the red flags and the challenges that could pose. But it's the reality, right? So it is, as designed right now, it is someone that really has a view of the whole situation. But that is something that we're really interested, I think, as all of us go through this process, to see how best we can utilize that person and how best to identify that person. I won't go into detail about logistics. Anyone that's done an assessment knows it's your best friend and it's your worst enemy, right? But just to note that it's a really critical part of something like this, because often you only have staff for a certain amount of time and you really need to make sure that you're getting into the field at the best, you know, when you need to be getting there. I just highlighted a couple of the criteria that we had noted here. You can see them, but just looking at some kind of previous experience in terms of doing leading assessments, having some basic skill set. So the second learning is setting an appropriate objective can be harder than it looks. So this was, Emily mentioned some of the objectives related to pre-crisis market mapping. And some of the challenges associated with that we saw is that because this is more of a resilience and development program, we are doing the PCMMA in year 2 to 3. And often, if you're doing an EMMA, for example, you're doing it at the very beginning because you want to know how you're going to respond, right? This is a very different model. We're using it in the course of a project, which is interesting and challenging, I think. Basically, we are going to be informing through this project, we're using a PCMMA to look at two critical market systems. Right now, we're going to be looking at millet and sorghum, and we're going to see what are some of the things that we can do to strengthen those market chains over the next year. So the program participants will be doing pilot programs for the third year of this project to sort of start to build some DRR, to look at some possible resilience outcomes that can be implemented over the last year. The goal of the program is not emergency focused, as I noted. So the resilience programming is sort of a new territory, especially for humanitarian actors, despite all the past few years discussions about resilience and where it sits and everything. That's still something that I think we haven't all worked out, right? And the target group for a production focused program is really the farmer, right? So the project that we're working on now is really supporting farmers. Whereas the EMMA map that Emily showed earlier, you could see that the target group, the people that we're looking to serve through this kind of market chain, is often the consumer. I'll just show you real quick. This is our draft map. You don't have to really see all the details. You just have to see the colors. So the pink is what we decided would be our target groups for this project. And if you remember in Emily's map, the target groups were really the consumers on the right. They were like the people that, in the case of a crisis, we want to make sure that they have access to the markets. They have continued access to the markets in a crisis. In our project in Tadud, we also want to look at what we can do to support the producer. And we actually might be looking at what we can do to support the other different market actors along the chain. So the target group kind of changes. We noted over the course of the past couple of weeks that it's not only going to be, we're not only looking to support the communities, but also all those different other actors in the chain, including possibly the producers. And the last note that I wanted to mention here, and this is just, maybe this is just a management thing, but I think with a tool like this where We're looking at a crisis in the midst of a resilience program. The staff themselves are development people. So that was really kind of a head shift also for a lot of the staff, you know, to start to think about, we're looking at what's going to happen in a crisis. I mean, they're familiar with crisis. They've been living with it for 15 years. But the program itself was really more development focused. And that's really been an interesting learning for them also as we were going forward to kind of look at the relationship between the emergency and development continuum, if you will. This could be actually an interesting tool to look at that. So I won't go through these objectives, but just to show briefly to reflect what Emily just noted, the first one and the last one are really about capacity and preparedness of the agency. So the objectives of this project in the end were we wanted to build our own capacity and the capacity of the consortium members. And the last one is we want to be prepared for the next emergency that will happen. And the two in the middle are the ones that I just sort of noted. We want to be looking at how we can be building the resilience of the communities, and also how we can be, the third one is how we can be strengthening the market system itself, how we can be strengthening the market chain before the next crisis. So learning three, you can define a crisis amid a crisis, maybe. So this is something that I think will be an ongoing learning. We had identified two crises that we want to be looking at. Drought, the last significant drought was in 2010, and armed conflict is the other one. And the thing about drought, which was an interesting learning, is that the drought was in 2010. However, we need to choose a specific time to be collecting data for, a specific period in time, so we can ask vendors, tell us about this period. They need to have some kind of a recall period. So when we were thinking about the drought, it actually wasn't 2010. It was the period before the next drought in 2011. So it was the period when the impact of the drought was the most significant. For armed conflict, this, I'm not sure in the end we're going to be able to do this, actually. This was something that they said, this was a really important part of Darfur and the Darfur experience. However, this year is actually kind of a flare-up year. This people were saying this year is a conflict year. And this brings me to that last point there. If we're looking at drought and we're going to be collecting information about the drought, but this is also a crisis year for armed conflict, we're going to have to be really careful in the way we ask questions and in the way we analyze the data to make sure that there aren't too many variables, right? This isn't actually a normal year. This is a crisis year, but there's often crises. So we just have to be really careful in the way that we analyze that data. And another complicating factor in Darfur is that in speaking to the people there, there are multiple types of crises, right? There are the farmer-herder crises, which happen regularly, and that's something that can be anticipated. There is regular tribal conflict, which is actually quite irregular, and it doesn't depend on the seasons, and it just happens whenever, but those are regular things that happen. And there's armed conflict, which is the one that they were really concerned about. So just to note that the definition of the crisis, this is, I think, is going to be a really interesting learning as we go forward. The fourth one, this I think was a really interesting one. The quantitative isn't always the most useful information. So often in market assessments, and particularly in Emma's actually, you need to know what is the volume of a product? What is the price of a product at a given time? How did that change? What are the volumes? What are the numbers of vendors? These are very quantitative information, and that's actually really critical for a market assessment. When you're doing a four-year recall, so we're going to be asking vendors 4 years ago in June 2011 what had happened in the impact due to the impact of this drought. We can't ask people how much were you selling per week and then how much were you selling per week, you know, a month after that, because this was 4 years ago and people are not going to remember that. So what will be more useful for us is percent change. So we're going to be looking at, tell us what happened in general. You know, they will be able to say, something decreased by about a third, or it decreased by about a half, or there were suddenly all new vendors that came in. You know, we'll be able to get some trends, but we won't really be able to get quantitative stuff. But actually, I think for what our purposes are, I think that's fine, and I think that's really useful information. The fifth one is choosing the market system was actually quite challenging as well. And this is specifically related to the fact that we're looking at a pre-crisis versus a crisis. So in Darfur, we decided to choose millet and sorghum, which are both key food security commodities, key food security products. But initially we were saying, oh, we'll just look at millet because that's the preferred commodity in a crisis. That's the preferred commodity in Darfur. People prefer millet. Then after a little bit of discussion, we said, actually, though, during a crisis, people often shift to sorghum, and that's been an interesting thing that's been happening over the past 15 years. Now people actually, because of our food aid, because of blocks in the supply chain, people eat sorghum during a crisis. So it wouldn't make sense to only be looking at millet, because in the next crisis there won't be any millet. So we have to make sure that you're looking at the crisis commodity as well as the substitute normal commodity. So that was an interesting learning from that one as well. And to do that, you just have to do your homework and find that out. And there's other experiences about that choice also. And the final one is that this is very preliminary, right? We're in the middle phases of this first PCMMA. But the potential applications, I think, could be really, really interesting and really different from what we've been able to see before. I just wanted to show briefly sort of the continuum. You've probably seen this in other forms of the types of market-based programs. On the left is asset transfers using a market, so cash and vouchers. In the middle is market support, so supporting a vendor, supporting transport, supporting the market directly so that the market can continue to provide for beneficiaries or provide for people. And then the one on the right is market strengthening. So how can we be strengthening the market so it itself can be more prepared for the next crisis? Normally what we would do in an EMMA is look at really the first two, the ones on the left, because we're looking at how can we transfer an asset, or possibly how can we benefit the market, how can we be providing some direct support to the market. What we're going to be looking at through the pre-crisis EMMA is actually the one on the right. And so it'll be some kind of market strengthening now, you know, looking at in the next drought, what's going to break in that millet supply chain most likely, and what can we do now in order to prevent that. So the kinds of activities that we were looking at, I listed a couple here, but it would be some kind of support to the market actors. We did some preliminary guessing. We haven't collected the field data yet, but we had a lot of knowledge in the room, so we started to pull out some of that potential guesswork. This was the first attempt at our post-crisis map. And without looking at any of the details, you can see where some of the blocks are, right? It's from the producer to the first intermediary. There's some new intermediaries, right? There's food aid. But we were looking at some of those first potential blocks and saying, okay, maybe we can build up the capacity of those first small traders. Maybe it's a storage issue. There was a credit issue that was brought up. So there's the potential for some really interesting stuff in terms of providing cash for some of the traders, supporting their credit lines, something that is quite different than what we would have done in the traditional EMMA. So the potential applications of this kind of work, I think, could be really interesting. I'm going to pass back to Emily for her experiences in Pakistan.
Okay, thanks. So I already talked, so I'm going to keep this fairly brief. But just to give you a quick context, so at IRC, we are currently in the middle of an OFDA-funded grant focused on developing and promoting market assessment tools for humanitarian actors. So as part of this, we are revising that PCMMA guidance doc that I mentioned earlier based on learning from other organizations, initial experiences with pre-crisis assessments, and also with our own. So as part of that, we're doing three pilots of the methodology. And we just finished our first one in Pakistan earlier this month, and I'll be leaving tomorrow for Niger, where we're doing our second. So I'm going to share a little bit of the learning that we got from Pakistan. So just very quickly, there's frequent flooding in Pakistan, and it's particularly bad in Sindh province, which is in the south. So we were looking at Sindh and at floods. We were looking at both emergency response and this sort of market strengthening, longer-term development stuff that we've been talking about. And of course, we wanted to gather learning on the overall approach so that we can put that into a revision of the document. So it was 2.5 weeks from late May through early June. We had 9 different agencies participating, including some Pakistani NGOs and then a lot of larger internationals. We looked at a mix of staple food items, livestock fodder, and drinking water, just so we can cover these ranges of sectors. So some conclusions. The first one for me was, having only experience with EMMA, I was relieved to discover that if you can lead an EMMA, you can lead a PCMMA. It's really not that different. Those 10 steps that I showed you and the 3 strands of analysis are essentially the same. However, there was one exception. So that is about timing. So Dina has already talked about this, so I'm not going to elaborate too much. But the idea is, with an EMMA, it's pretty straightforward. You go to Nepal, it's 1 month after the quake. You analyze what markets looked like the month before the quake, you analyze what markets look like now, and then you have your pre and your post-crisis, and you're done. With pre-crisis market assessments, it's not so straightforward. So you know what the markets look like now, but for us now was June 2015. Normally floods happen in like the August-September time period. So if we gather data about now, it's not very useful, especially if we're looking at agricultural markets like livestock fodder and food. So then we have to ask about, we can't really ask about August 2015, so we have to ask about August 2014. But then we're talking about floods that happened in 2010. So we can't use August 2014 as a baseline for, you know, the pre-crisis, when the crisis happened in 2010, because obviously prices could have gone up since then. Government policies could have changed. There's all kinds of things that could have happened. So we really struggled with this. And normally you show two maps in your report, the pre and the post-crisis. So we struggled a bit. So our conclusion, when, as I mentioned, we weren't sure which ones to show. So I think this is the August 2014 one, which is a good basis for what may happen in the future. So the conclusion is that baseline timing is complicated. and as Dina mentioned, the trends, the idea of trends and impacts may be more useful than actual numbers. And you really need to be very clear with your team about what points in time you're most interested in, because it's always tricky when you're asking about what happened in the past. And it gets very, very confusing if you're collecting data about 10 different points in time. So you need to be very, very clear about that from the start. So that's it so far. No great conclusions about that, but I think we need to address that better in our guidance document. The third conclusion is simply that the potential applications of doing these assessments are really valuable. So, you know, as I mentioned, we were looking at both emergency response and sort of market strengthening longer term stuff. So we did the regular emergency response stuff, and we discovered that, unsurprisingly, this usually happens, to a large extent, the markets were able to provide these items in times of flooding and probably would be in the future. But we also discovered other things. For example, when floods happen, yes, roads are cut off, but one of the big reasons that prices go up and that people go further into debt is that their existing stocks are destroyed. So if you have, you know, 2 months more wheat flour supply in your village, but it's destroyed by the flood because your storage is not watertight, then that means you're going to have to, you know, sell your cows to have enough money to support your family for that longer gap. And the people we talked to were still recovering from that 5 years later. But it wasn't just limited to the village. Surprisingly, even the government warehouses that are there and are supposed to be stocking these food items for the reasons of food security, they were not watertight either. And so during floods, they lost a lot of their stock. And at the district villages level, they lost a lot of their stock. So, I mean, it was a very obvious conclusion that there's a lot of stuff you could do to just improve the overall quality of storage. And that would mean that floods in the future have a much less severe impact. And that's it's a very basic conclusion, but it's a very valuable conclusion. And then there were lots of other things like that. So in terms of planning, preparedness planning, disaster management planning, what are the best routes to market? Where do people normally gather? What are the high points of land when floods happen? Because we could pre-position storage facilities there, we could pre-position water pumps there. There are all kinds of things that you can do. So overall, we think it does make sense to do these assessments. There's a lot of value. And the fourth conclusion is the counter to that, which is that even though we have these great recommendations, it's not always clear who's going to be in a position to carry them out. So we as humanitarians are not always equipped with the right networks or the right, you know, skill sets or whatever to be able to put together a emergency mapping plan or to pre-position things or to work on improved storage facilities, because that's not what we normally do. And also, these pre-crisis times are normally times of very scarce funding for humanitarian actors. So when we were there, IRC was about to get rid of a large portion of its staff, and a lot of the agencies in that area were in a similar position. So our entire assessment team was like towards the end of its contract, and it was kind of a sad time. So where are they supposed to get the funding in these non-crisis times to do these great interventions that will prevent the severity of the impact of these disasters in the future? So we're in the position of having these great recommendations that may never see the light of day. So I had a few thoughts about how we may start to address this, but I'd also be interested in later on maybe hearing from you. So, you know, my ideas are better linkages between humanitarian and development actors, not only like among different agencies, but sometimes even within different agencies, they're not really talking. Another one is just really trying to figure out good methods for knowledge management and dissemination. So we have these reports. Maybe the next flood won't be for 4 more years, but we have all these great recommendations. So we need to make sure that internally these reports are known about and that, you know, the right managers have them so that when a disaster happens, they're like, oh yeah, we know what to do. This is part of our contingency plan. And then I think we need in the humanitarian community a lot more sort of push promotion, evidence building and advocacy around the value of investing in preparedness and seeking out funding for those kinds of projects. All right, so that is, in a nutshell, my learning from Pakistan. So I'm going to pass it over to Emily Farr.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some learning from a PCM MMA that Oxfam did in Tigray and Afar in Ethiopia, which are some of the northern regions of the country. We had three objectives. These objectives will probably look a little bit familiar to you at this stage in the presentation. So the first one is around capacity building of both staff and partners. To be able to use market analysis across preparedness, response, and ongoing programs. The second was around improving preparedness specifically. And the third, identifying activities that we could do in non-emergency times that would either mitigate or enable people to adapt, et cetera. So, for example, through DRR or resilience kind of programs. So the first of the two regions was Afar. We were specifically in the Warda or district of Abala. And Abala is divided into two livelihood zones. We have both the pastoralist groups as well as agro-pastoralist groups. So there's some agriculture that happens there as well. But in general, it's not really known to be an agricultural region. It's a pretty hot, dry, dusty, rocky kind of context. So we used a lot of existing government data, historical trends around hazards, as well as our own experience from this region, local knowledge, and identified drought as a primary hazard. The second location was in the Tigray region. So this is Raya Azebo Warda, Raya Azebo district. This is an agro-pastoralist area, a little bit better conditions overall for agriculture. And again, here our analysis showed that drought was the primary hazard. So looking at two different regions, two different locations, there's three different livelihoods groups amongst those different locations, but looking at drought as the primary hazard in both. We selected four critical market systems across the two regions. So in Abala, we are looking at maize. Maize is both a main staple food that's purchased by poor households. It's also produced for household consumption, and small numbers of people also are able to produce it to sell. Sheep and goats, or shoats, we looked at that in both Abala and Raya Azebo. And these are really critical income market system in emergencies. Sorghum and Raya Azebo, both a staple food as well as produced for an income source. And teff, you probably are familiar with teff, staple grain of Ethiopia that you use to make injera. And in Raya Azebo, we looked at that as also a key income source. So we had some benefit of a previous PCMMA that happened in late 2014 in the Somali region of Ethiopia as part of a pilot. And so we were able to get some learning from that and use that in our planning. So a few things that we took away from the previous experience, more emphasis on the practical preparation, on the logistics. Dina's already mentioned that, but that's really critical. Just making sure we have enough time for the exercise. So we added a few extra days. We had 11 in total. To be reasonable about the scope, this is one that I think we still didn't do quite as well on. As you've already heard, we were looking at some different locations, different contexts. We actually collected data on a couple additional critical market systems than those that I mentioned on the previous slide. And we ended up not really following all of them through, you know, with the analysis and the conclusion. So we ended up with a lot of data. We probably could have focused a little bit further. And the last one was really to get the critical market systems right. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. A few challenges that we experienced, you've already heard some about this, the issues with the period of analysis. In our case, you know, drought is something that can happen over even a couple of years. Within that period, you have normal seasonal variations. You have kind of normal lean seasons or hunger periods in addition to a drought itself. So, you know, in a normal year as well as within a drought year, you have a lot of different variation in getting the timing right in terms of when you're collecting the data, the dates that you're collecting the data for. You've heard a lot from my colleagues on this. This was also a challenge for us. a bit of a challenge around aligning some of the EMMA and the PCMMA guidance. Emily did a good description of the two different processes. There's a lot of similarities between them, as you've heard. The EMMA guidance document is really a full-on document, really describes everything in a lot of detail. There are 10 steps. The PCMMA guidance, it's a new document. It's meant to be one that we're going to learn from and adapt and change over time. It doesn't go into lots and lots of detail. So there's a lot that you can pull from the EMMA experience to use in your PCMMA document. However, the EMMA is a 10-step process. The PCMMA is a 15-step process. And to actually try to align those, that was still a challenge for us. And another aspect is that, you know, in training people, in building capacity around PCMMA, you know, you also hope that that leaves them more prepared to do future EMMAs, right? So as much as those can kind of be aligned and in sync, that's going to help us in the long run. And the last two kind of go together. We collected a lot of data. You know, there's a lot of data, there's a lot of analysis. This definitely impacted our, that and the fact that there's a little bit less pressure overall to get those reports done. That definitely impacted our ability to come out with a timely report. So at this stage, we did the data collection through mid-February, and we're just doing the final edits of our reports now. So a few conclusions. You know, this one of the objectives was to build capacity, and it does seem that this is a really successful approach. We had Oxfam staff, we had local partners from all around the country, as well as the locations where we were actually doing the analysis, and local government staff. Most of them had little market experience before this. We use this really mixed methods, hands-on approach, very practical training. And this learning, kind of learning by doing hands-on approach, left people in kind of a good position to do future PCMMAs. And I want to just draw your attention here on the bottom to this line. I feel confident to lead a future EMMA or PCMMA. After the exercise, 70% of people felt confident to do that. And that's a real difference that we've seen from the EMMA trainings, where one of the biggest challenges we had was, you know, people would go do an EMMA training, they would understand things, but when somebody said, okay, well, can you go ahead and lead one? They'd say, oh, like, I'm not sure, you know, I haven't done one before. So they didn't actually have the confidence. So this is self-reported data. It has limitations, but I think that confidence is a bit of a difference between the two approaches. So moving on to the next point, again, the details on this slide are not important, but what I wanted to show here was we did a lot of analysis to identify critical market systems. We did analysis thinking about challenges we had faced in past responses. We used HEA baseline data, the household economy approach, which is what this represents. Looking at a potential drought scenario, we were trying to analyze the impact of a drought on different market systems, or on different sources of food and income and the ways that people are spending their money. We used more qualitative baseline data. We used local knowledge and local experiences. But even after all of that, there wasn't consistency in the results, and we still had some questions. So what we decided to do was just take the first day of our fieldwork to confirm our critical market systems. And we just did this with some focus group discussions, different locations, men and women, and we just asked some basic questions around people's main sources of food, income, their main expenditures, particularly around food. And in particular, we wanted to understand this for each wealth group. So how are the poor getting their food? How are the poor getting their income? What about the middle? What about the better off? And of course, to understand this in both the baseline as well as in the reference period, the drought period. And what we found from this is we got different results than all of our graphs, charts, and analyses. Not entirely different, but there were some differences. So, for example, in Abala, in Afar, wheat had been identified, particularly by the local actors, the local people who are with us in the workshop, as a key commodity. But when we actually went out to talk to people, we found that for the poor, for the poorest wealth group, actually, maize was the most important commodity. So, and that's because it's cheapest. And so that was immediately clear after just one or two discussions. And so this, using this first day, we felt was really important. And so one of the key distinctions between maybe the EMMA and the PCMMA around this is that in an EMMA, you're probably going to have really fresh data. You're going to have assessments. People are just going to be, coming from the field, probably asking a lot of these basic types of questions. In the PCMMA, we were using these HEA baselines that were 7, 8 years old. People who even from the area maybe had made some assumptions. Maybe they didn't know as much about the poor groups compared to other income groups, other wealth groups. So if you don't have fresh data, just testing those assumptions, you don't want to mess that stage up. another conclusion, you've heard this conclusion before, but the potential applications are really valuable. So this table is from Abala, and this one is from Raya Azebo. And rather than the details, what I just wanted to illustrate here, you saw from Dina's presentation, she had a kind of similar table, but not yet filled out, right? So this is just a summary of the recommendations that we came away with. This is sort of the later stage of this. And so you can see that for different periods, the emergency preparedness and contingency planning, then within the humanitarian response, different types of, or different levels of kind of working with or through markets, as well as a longer term market strengthening and development. Then for each of the different market systems that we looked at, we came away with this kind of range of recommendations. And this sort of scope and spectrum, I think, is a bit unique to this tool, at least in kind of a typical humanitarian experience. And then finally, this is a point that also links with Emily Sloan's last point. We need to also integrate action planning. You do this analysis, but then what, right? You've got to have some follow-on activities. And I'm just going to talk quickly through some of these different things that need to be considered for after the PCMMA. One is around market monitoring. This is a component of the PCMMA process. And this goes beyond just kind of price monitoring, but really continuing to understand those critical market systems, identifying indicators, and looking at how those may be changing over time. That can also serve as early warning. And so if you don't have an early warning system in place, if you don't have a market monitoring system in place that would enable you to collect more than just kind of really basic data, then this is something that it needs some sort of mechanism. A deeper seasonal analysis, we've discussed a lot in here, those challenges. And so, you know, you may need to be able to collect some additional data to better understand some of those seasonal variations. Understanding regional linkages. You're not going to be able to get to all of the parts of a country that may have some relationship with your more local market system. So, for example, if items are being produced in other regions, you may be able to get some price data, but you probably aren't going to be able to go and talk to traders in those other regions and really confirm your maps and those regional linkages. So that's something that may need some additional follow-on work. Expansion into other regions. So in Ethiopia, Oxfam is working in a lot of other parts of the country beyond what we've been able to do, where we've been able to do PCMMAs. And so it would be important to continue that work. Building on learning, of course, for capacity building purposes, you know, you need to be able to kind of continue to do something in order to retain those skills. So having your staff, you know, go and work in some of those other regions to collect information, do PCMMAs. And then finally, and this is a little bit more what Emily Sloan was talking about, just, of course, following up on the recommendations, and particularly around preparedness, right? If you don't actually follow up on your preparedness recommendations, then, you know, you're really missing out on a lot of the effectiveness of this approach. So I think that concludes our remarks. So maybe we can hand it over to Usman.